Hi, Kelvin.
Hi, Ade.
Kelvin, we are talking about tetrionics, and you've already talked about many different facets and aspects of it. You've explained that on the basis of the equilateral geometry, you were able to see a different kind of logic in physics and electrodynamics, in science in general. You were able to see that it is simpler to look at science and the findings of science by the use of tetrionics. And previous time we talked about the zero point energy explorations. There are many people who realize that energy use or energy abuse as it is done at present calls for some rethinking. A lot of energy is wasted. Some people actually realize that it's possible to get energy out of different technologies. These machines have been created for political reasons, money reasons. They were also suppressed. And in the previous session, you spoke about the way we can rethink all of that. How you reconnected the ideas of Tesla with those of Hertz, and have shown that the transverse wave and the longitudinal waves actually form part of the same system. Once you see how they connect in the field, which can be described by tetrionics. And we already started to look at the ways that can be used. And so I'd like to see if today we could speak about the zero-point energy technology and how from tetrionics you've been looking at it and what people can find there. Would that work for you?
Right. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, well, I just have a general discussion on energy itself, the different forms that we can create, and where things are slightly off track with chemistry and other developments that are out there, plus the practical side of things as to what's happening on the what they call the free energy side or the zero point energy side, where a lot of experiments are taking place.
Yeah, would it be possible?
But can't be explained fully.
Yeah. Would it be possible to have a start with just recapitulating some of the devices that are now known in the zero-point energy circles? Yesterday you've already mentioned Bedini and why and how his technology works. There are some others. Would it be practical to just mention a couple that others can connect up to that?
It's a broad list,
yeah,
and that there's a lot still being developed, and a lot that there's people out there that don't even release their information. They hang on to it to dear death, and then they release it whenever they get a snippet of progress. But sure, there's a lot out there. There's practical experiments like Eric Dollard, who's after years of research is getting back into the field after having a few trials and misadventures in his life. And as such, he's very wary of who he talks to and what information he gives out, but slowly people are prying some information out and he's releasing new books. His work's mainly focused on his experimental results from his time when he was working with high-frequency AC and RF transmitters, even DC in some of his experiments. He's letting it come out that there's probably two great videos that he's produced, but a lot of his work focuses around his practical results and how he's interpreted it into a theory of into electrical theory of space and time and all that sort of stuff. You got to remember what tetrionics is doing is giving my perspective of how the universe works, and it does it from these equilateral triangles of electromagnetic energy, the Planck quanta, whereas most of the experimenters that are out there in the zero point or free energy groups are usually doing practical experiments, getting results, sometimes refining those experiments, sometimes just releasing the information straight away. But at that point, they're trying to interpret their practical results or their experimental results and to develop a theory. And from my perspective, they're still stuck in the same rut that modern physics is, and that is that they're trying to explain the mechanics of the unseen from a top-down approach, just as modern science looks at it and says, well, here's what the math tells us, and this has been proven right, or this has been proven wrong, and we've refined the math as we've gone along. Likewise, the practical free energy community do the same with the experiments. They get their results. Some experiments produce results they can explain. Some, and probably most of them in the case of the zero-point community, produce strange and anomalous results, which usually involve creation of large amounts of energy or releases of energy. So once they've exhausted their experimental side of things, tinkering around with it, fine-tuning it, trying different things to improve the performance of the device, they normally offer it out to the community, and then the community come back and their first question is, how does it work? Or have the scientific community looked at this and explained it? In which case, invariably the answer is no. So then they go off and try to develop a theory that explains their anomalous results, where this extra energy is coming from, and what brings it about, what is it about their device that creates this energy to make it work, versus why the scientists say they're wrong. But they're still stuck with this myopic process of taking established knowledge, or better still, established mind maps, mental pictures of how atoms work and things like that, and saying, well, this must be what it's doing in order to produce this result. And as a result, you end up with probably a theory or an atomic theory for every single device that's out there. There's lots, apart from Eric, you've also got earlier experiments by Edwin Gray. You'll see Ed Lederskin pop up because of his Coral Castle down in Florida. Just a big mystery. They can't understand how he shifted the limestone blocks, but he left a flywheel and a wooden tripod. And they've scratched their heads ever since trying to figure out exactly how he got this flywheel to move these blocks in the dead of night with no noise to create the Coral Castle. He just left clues, and I would even argue that Tesla did the same. Tesla did a lot of practical experiments, kept a fair amount of information to himself. We've fortunately got a copy of his Colorado notebooks, but even they, what they particularly show to me anyway, is that he was tinkering. He started off trying experiments one way to advance what he'd done in New York. And as he tinkered and changed and worked, he completely changed his approach. And he went away from AC energy generation to DC. And then when he came back for his Wardenclyffe project, he had ideas about DC and ball lightning and things like that running around in his head. But you can see in his notes that even he was attempting to develop a theory on the fly. He still didn't fully understand what was going on. He couldn't explain it, but he was attempting in his own way to clearly express an understanding of the physics that were at work and why the results were so different to what the scientific community was developing mathematically. And as we touched on last night, the key to that is simply that the scientific community, after the advent of Einstein's photoelectric effect and his development of special relativity at the same time, or release of the theory, switched from DC disruptive circuits to solid-state transverse waves and oscillators built on passive components, where DC discharges are avoided or suppressed at every chance. So we completely suppressed a source of longitudinal waves, and we took on a transverse wave which we could manipulate and control a lot easier because there's no high voltages, there's no surges of power, as in energy and momentum. There's just this changing EM field that we can manipulate to do what we want, and it's served us well for the last century. But what's happened is all that DC side of things, where we've got linear momentum coplanar with the direction of velocity of the wave's propagation, has been negated. It's been stopped, suppressed, and shut down. I wouldn't even say suppressed. It's simply a case of the focus of the scientific community swung over to relativity and its explanation of electrical charges, and then we developed QED. So we thought we got more and more understanding, which we did, but what we failed to realize that we were getting more understanding about a narrow section of the technology and power sources that are out there. Fortunately, there's some diehards out there that also studied the notes of people like Eric and Tesla, and these are the likes of Bedini, trying to think of his name, it's just gone out of my head, John Bearden, John Searle, Stanley Meyer on a different thing, Rodin has done some work, Peter Lindemann, they're all people that have looked at the work that Tesla did, realized that, took it on face value, you might say, that he got results that didn't gel with either what they were taught in electrical theory at school through their education, or what they experienced by hands-on practical work in the fields. Now, all these guys there's many, many devices out there. Just as I said, just as many explanations as to how these devices work. The only advantage I had over everyone else was, instead of this top-down view and having to look at the results and say, well, perhaps the electron's doing something different, or perhaps it's getting energy from a different part of the vacuum and we're somehow tapping into it to release this energy, I had a physical model, which was, again, those triangles of energy and momenta within them. What it did was, as part and parcel of Tetrionics, was if I had to develop the theory, I had to use these triangles to explain as much as I could. As I said, when I started, I just wanted to explain the partial charges of quarks, and it's since developed into six e-books with a seventh on the way. But every time I used the triangles, even within my own knowledge of electrical theory and QED, the modeling forced me to change my own understanding of quantum electrodynamics and how energy is, what energy is, what electrical energy is, how it transfers energy and how we can tap it and use it, compared to what I've been taught. I'm like, I needed that grounding in electrical theory in order to be able to even approach this subject. But once I did, and I applied tetrionic theory from the quantum mechanical side of things, and built it up to line in with chemistry and gravity and everything else, I discovered that even my own mental maps were radically changed. And I've done that to a few others. Tom Bearden's got a device, which is basically a couple coils that generates energy. A lot of people struggle to explain it. Even Tom, in his own explanations, is a bit vague on some details. But you can simply put the tetrionic geometry for a photon directly over the coil assembly that he's got, and you can see where this energy is being stored and where it's being tapped from. Along the way, because these theories and experiments are all done by people who are highly focused in creating the technology in the first place, everyone describes things in different ways. Even Tesla describes things in different ways. A lot of people read his book and see various terms, and they interpret it using modern physics and our vocabulary, And that's not what Tesla was getting at. For example, when Tesla talks about high frequency DC discharges, a lot of people, or actually high frequency discharges, a lot of people assume that relates back to Tesla coils with AC currents, and they're alternating very fast at high voltages, when in fact he's talking about DC discharges that he was mechanically breaking or opening and closing the circuit to make these discharges, a bit like holding the leads of a jump start battery together and zapping them really fast backwards and forwards to create these discharges that sparked out. As Tesla's experiments developed, he discovered that he didn't want AC. What he wanted was these tiny discharges. And it's these DC, or direct current discharges, that create these longitudinal waves as modeled in Tetrionics. If you try to do the same thing with an AC waveform, you don't create the longitudinal waves. So you need a mechanical way of opening and closing circuits connected, or a circuit connected to a battery, that's then fed to a spark gap in order for the discharge to occur. And then usually you have a capacitor in parallel with it, so that when the spark is created, the feedback energy of that spark is captured and stored in the capacitor. And if you look at Tesla's circuits over and over and over again, this is what you'll see. You'll see usually a battery, or a generator, but usually a battery. You'll see a spark gap or a mechanical, firstly you'll see a spark gap in parallel with it, in parallel with a capacitor, and there'll be a device, usually a circular description, and it'll be there not as a coil winding or anything, but it's there to open and close the circuit to create these DC discharges. There's a few videos of John Bedini's, where he's got a flywheel, a bicycle wheel, and plastic acrylic models that he's made that are similar, where he spins it up and says, look, I start this wheel in motion. We've got a coil at the bottom of the wheel as it circulates around, and we get this energy generated, and that energy will take a dead battery that's been sitting in the garden for 10 years and charge it back up so it's as good as new, or it holds more voltage than new, and it has more amperage, as in amp hours, that it can hold. So it's better than brand new condition. And when he patented it, and when he releases the information on the videos, etc., no disrespect to him, because obviously he's got his patents, he wants to protect his intellectual property, but that's not my driving motivation. Mine is to explain what's going on. What's happening is, as the flywheel's going around with these magnets, the coil's opening and closing, it's creating a trigger circuit, and then he has a DC discharge in the circuit, and that is what's creating the voltage spikes to charge these batteries back up. Now, a lot of people, when they're aware of the DC discharges, will find them everywhere. Well, not everywhere, but in a lot of the circuits for these zero-point energy extractors. When you'll find that probably 50-60% of them out there have a DC discharge somewhere in their circuit. It creates a spark or allows a capacitor to build up and then discharge it like Tesla was doing. They can be in the form of DC just spark gaps or Jacob's ladders. There's a multitude of ways you can discharge it, but so long as you're creating a short, brief discharge of the capacitive energy of the circuit, it will create a DC discharge, and that's what you then have to tap. At this point, obviously, scientific theory goes out the window with a lot of them, because you have this spark that's creating, and up until recently, they haven't been able to measure the voltage spikes, but now the oscilloscopes are getting better, the equipment's able to measure shorter duration, higher voltage switches, and they're becoming more affordable for most experimenters to have on the benchtop. what they're seeing is when these DC discharges occur, there is a huge, very transient, almost instantaneous spike of electrical energy. And on an oscilloscope, it is literally just a vertical line, straight up, straight down. There's no slope to it or anything. It's just an instantaneous burst of electrical energy at high voltage. And that's what's being tapped in some of these. In other cases, they're not. But in the cases I'm talking about here, because I'm leading to a particular solution, that's what's being tapped for the energies that we want. The reason why it's such a vertical line, instantaneous without a slope, is that they're longitudinal waves. They're not, even though they're DC, in a sense, they're 90 degrees out of phase with the normal measurements, and the energy momenta they release comes out in a planar waveform with its square root linear momentum, all collinear with its direction of propagation. And this is what Tesla called stinging rays. As I said, if you do practical experiments like I've done, when you create these DC discharges, if you get high frequency, high voltage ones, you'll start to feel the air rushing out. Tesla even commented that he was using them to circulate air in the shed he had at Colorado. It was creating a breeze because the rays that come out have linear momentum, just like transverse waves, but they produce a real force. They stung his face. You can feel the effect. And they circulate air, particularly if it's ionized, because, again, if you look at the Planck geometries as expressed in tetrionic theory, you will see that there's a positive side to these rays, there's a negative side, or charge field, and that the orientation of the Planck charges is such that they will accelerate ionized or charged particles. So if the air is slightly ionized, it'll move it. If it's not, it will accelerate it all the same. And as it goes through the DC discharge, it will become ionized. So you will be producing ozone and all the familiar things that experimenters are often commenting when their devices are running. There's a smell of ozone going around, which they usually put back to the electrical switching gear rather than the actual discharge itself doing the work. When I first looked at tetrionics, the first thing I had to get my head around was the shape of protons and neutrons and the electrons themselves. And the reason why I'm saying this is because tetrionics forces you to change your mindset on what particles look like and how the fields of energy momenta actually work. When you have this knowledge, then you can start to explain things like I am with Tesla and Bedini and other people out there that have various devices. And you can even explain things like Rodin's coils, how they're just a representation of purely the electric function of an electromagnetic field. In order to create what the stars do and to give us our unlimited energy, we need to expand Mark Rodin's model from an electric field toroidal coil to an EM field geometry. And this is why the tokamak fusion plants don't work, because they've gone to all the trouble of making the toroidal fields with the magnets to contain plasma at temperature 10 times that of the sun, and yet they don't produce any usable power output. If the fusion model's to be believed, if we can create pressures and temperatures 10 times that of the sun, why is it that our fusion rate is only nanoseconds and then it can't be sustained? The reason for it, and this is where Mark Rodin's theory breaks down, is because the toroidal part is purely the electric part of an EM field. I've got CAD models that will show this for those that are interested. They're available on the Google SketchUp page. But if you model an EM field with all its radiated charge fields coming out from the center like a sun, you'll see Mark Rodin's coil appear in the electric component of the field. And that's only half the field. You still have this magnetic. The magnetic sits above and below, filling in the donut holes. It acts like a stopper, if you like. But that's not where all the action's occurring. All the action is occurring right at the focus, at the center point between the electric and the magnetic fields. Now, you can't see these fields when you look at it with the naked eye in Tesla's experiments or in spark gaps when you create them, because all you have is this bright flash. It's like, well, it's literally the same as looking into a welder's arc and trying to understand what's going on. What you're creating is a ball of plasma, or ideally what you want is an evacuated space where the discharge can take place, because that reduces the noise. It cuts down on the heat that's generated. It's still produced, but it's different. But it still allows the forces to be built up and transmitted out. So you can have the EM, or the energy momentum component, extend out past the fused quartz of these evacuated chambers. You can tap those EM fields simply by putting a inductive coil around them, because an EM field, even if it's stationary in one spot like a sun or a discharge, is simply an electromagnetic field with diamond-shaped geometries as pictured in tetrionic theory. And if you put a coil around that, then as the energy content shifts, it creates a changing electromagnetic field, which will induce a current in the coil. Alternatively, you could master the controls of these EM fields and effectively have them very steady, and then you move the coil up and down. It's no different than Faraday's experiments. All we're doing is replacing a bar magnet with a discharge of energy. The discharge of any energy creates the electromagnetic field, which we've always taken to be, in the case of a bar magnet, a purely magnetic field, because the electric component is neutralized. The positive and the negatives balance out. We can't see them there, but they exist all the same. And that's one of the things that tetrionic theory I had to really struggle with, because these fields are there. When they show up really clearly is when you start to look at what gave rise to relativity in the first place. Relativity's based around a problem, which was, if we have a magnet, we move a conductor around it, we create an electric current. Or if we have a stationary inductive loop and we move the magnet, again we create a current. Where does this electrical current come from if the magnet only has magnetic fields in it? Because magnetic fields don't do any work. Only the electric component can accelerate an electron, even the Large Hadron Collider. The magnets in the Large Hadron Collider only steer the baryons, the protons around the circuit. All the acceleration is done by electrical energy. But you need the two. You need the electric to accelerate, to turn it left and right under Lorentz forces. When Einstein looked at it, he simply said, what's the solution to this? And his solution was that, just to keep it really short, was that as the fact that the magnet or the coil was moving meant that the motion created a magnetic moment in the electrons, and that allowed the magnetic field of the permanent magnet to affect the electrons' magnetic field, the tiny one, and that's what made it move. That's the foundation of special relativity, that that motion itself changes particle shapes from perfectly round spheres into a little squashed version. And the squashing of these things, because of the motion, creates a magnetic field that allows them to be moved by other magnets. Elegant theory led to general relativity and took all its baggage with it into general relativity. but it's not an accurate depiction of what's really happening. Again, it's the top-down view of or explanation of physics. Whereas when I did Tetrionics from the bottom up, I had to use the models and I had to understand what the models were telling me in order to work out exactly what was happening. And what was happening was that we had this undeniable fact that even bar magnets with magnetic fields must have an electric field with them. And this equilateral geometry, because it's equilateral, when you move either the magnet with its EM field or fields or the loop of wire, means that as the loop, the motion of either with the circuit of the wire creates a changing electromagnetic field. And it's the electric component that accelerates the electrons. Now, the reason why I brought this up was magnets store energy. Even though that you never have to charge them up like a battery or do anything to them, they'll sit on the fridge forever and a day. They're way many times, they have much more energy in them so that they overcome the force of gravity, because you can hold a piece of paper or a child's picture on the fridge, on the door of a fridge with a small magnet, and it will never ever fall down. The magnet doesn't wear out. The energy that's contained in its electromagnetic fields circulates endlessly and is enhanced by the ferric metal themselves of the bar magnet itself to create a strong electromagnetic field. And we use the magnetic component to hold it to the fridge. And because we call them magnets and we've focused on the readily available force that they produce, we ignore the electric component. And it's the electric component, when you understand tetrionic theory, that suddenly opens doors to a lot of explanations for these zero-point devices. Calvin, the reason
Can I connect that up to the work of Hutchinson? Because there you see that he uses the electrical field to drive a gravity effect, and thus, as he works on metallic objects mainly, a magnetic effect. So there must be an extension that from this approach you can really explain that other effect as well. Have you already addressed it in tetrionics?
I've looked at a few of his devices. Yep.
Because
from
what you said now, part of it reflects on what Hutchinson has done with his electrogravitational work. Part of it is also in connection to what Victor Schauberger has done with his rotational flow electrodynamics. And part of it also comes back in the approach of Walter Russell, who looks at these vortex fields as well. And that idea came up when you were earlier talking about the toroidal model of Marc Rodin.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to explain verbally, because each person not only has one device or one design, they often have many offshoots. Some concentrate on magnetic fields accelerating devices. Howard, for example, did that. Some focus on, a lot of them, I should say, focus on the magnetic effects, as I was just saying then, because the magnetic forces are what present themselves most readily to us. Even though it's an electromagnetic field in a bar magnet, we see the magnetic force fields more than up until now, they don't even suspect that there are electric fields in there. But the tetrionic geometry says that it's there. So each device, you really need to sit down, in some cases, redraw what they're actually doing. And physically, as I said, like with Bedini's transformers, etc., place little triangles indicating the direction of charges, whether it's electrons, you use negative triangles in the direction of their flow. If you want to do protons moving, you use positive charges with the right change of fields. And you just look at the individual components, like the inductors and the capacitors, as we drew out yesterday, I think it was, in the LC circuits. and you look at what the energy is physically doing in these circuits, and then you look at, usually there's an end result, that there might be a device or a light, there might be energy transfer, or there might be energy seemingly coming from middle of nowhere, or there might be a component or a model rail in the case of Howard, model train set with carriages is accelerated for seemingly no reason, just because of the orientation of the magnets. What I'm trying to get at is that there's an explanation for a lot of these. Where there isn't, you begin to get dubious of what they're doing, or the fact that you're missing part of the picture and you need more information on their work. But inevitably, everything that produces energy that falls within the zero point or free energy community has to come back to these equilateral triangles of energy, because that's what builds the universe. And no matter what, how they explain their own work, or how even I might interpret their work, you have to look at their circuits, look at the geometry of the electric and the magnetic fields, because they are the things, that's the geometry that tells us how it really works. There's a lot of devices out there that say they tap the vacuum energy, or the energy of the vacuum, and it's just a because of popular science, it's perceived as a sea of frothing, turbulent energy that you can just reach in and grab a handful or a bucket full of energy, and if you do it with the right devices, you'll suddenly have a ton of energy out there. It doesn't exist like that. They're all made up of these triangles, and what you're doing in each and every experiment is simply looking at a way to get these high entropic energies or long wavelengths, many or not long or and superpositioned wavelengths, how to extract them in the most efficient way so that you can concentrate them and use them. Even DC discharges don't literally produce energy. What they do is they create an electromagnetic field, which then allows you to tune for various energies and frequencies that's around it in order to generate the big DC discharge that you see and measure. When I did tetrionic theory, I thought at first, when I saw the structure of the atoms, the protons and the neutrons, that they would be the key to free energy, because atoms seem to have energy all the time. We don't seem to see everything freezing. They store energy, and everything, unless we heat it up, stays at that energy level. What's creating it? It's tied into spectral lines, etc. But until I understood the tetrionic QED processes, I didn't even understand the role that they really played, which is the role of a quantum synchronous rotator or converter, where electrons, when you give them energy, create a field. That field can be coupled to the external fields, and that in turn gives the energy to the electron for motion, so that when you accelerate it, you create a secondary chem field. These circuits or these fields, when they're energized, have the same effect as putting power to a radio antenna, where a little bit of power creates a field in the the antenna creates the field, and that can be tuned to the signal that you want, and it enhances it. Instead of being a passive device, you're actively receiving and drawing the radio signal in, because you've applied just a touch of energy to that antenna. Similarly, electrons act the same way. They're very efficient. They extract this highly disorganized long wavelength energy from the vacuum around them. It's not truly a vacuum. It's an ether, as I put it. It's full of energy, but it's not this foam that people talk about. It tunes or inductively couples to these energies, and that gives the self-energy of the electron. That's where the energy of the electron comes from, when it's in motion and when it's creating its fields of interaction. Protons and neutrons can store their energy in endless loops, just like a tetrion, because every proton and electron and neutron is made up of 9 tetrions, so they store energy. So we have a model of a device that can store energy, just like you do with a gas bottle. You fill it up with gas and it weighs a bit more. Well, if you build a deuterium nuclei, you can fill it up with energy, and that energy just adds weight to the nuclei that you've made. So you have a device that's sitting on your desktop that looks like a little Coke bottle, and in fact you can store more energy in it than the nuclear blast that leveled Hiroshima, or for that matter any nuclear blast, including thermodynamics, thermonuclear devices that have ever detonated, because it comes down to E equals MC squared. So the more energy you put into the device, the heavier it gets. So just like a gas cylinder, you can pick it up and say, well, there's still 8 kilograms more than the metal that it's made of. So I've got 8 kilograms of nuclear energy I can release. But I'm getting off topic again. Mm-hmm. How this relates back to all the free energy devices out there is that a lot of them have come from looking at Tesla's work and or other practical experiments where there's been a noticed release of extra energy that can't be accounted for with the energy that was provided to the circuit. More energy out than in. And that leads to these discussions where people say, well, we've got over-unity devices. More energy's come out than what we ever put in. We've put our watt meters on it. We can see that we've only got 10 watts being put in, but we're putting out 800. So we must be getting it from somewhere. We can't explain it with modern physics, because when we invite the scientists along, they go, very interesting, but there must be a problem. And invariably, with enough time and attention, they will find a relativistic or another explanation for where this could be coming from, including the much vaunted virtual particles, etc., which is present even in their own mathematical theories. But what they're failing to do in literally each and every case, no matter what the experiments are, where there's more energy out than in, what they're neglecting is the fact that their theory is only focusing on either electric or magnetic energies. They're failing to take what into account what Faraday told us and taught us back in the 1800s. And that is that wherever there is an electric, there is a magnetic. And that was reinforced by Maxwell with his ever-repeated formulas, which simply say wherever there is a changing electric field, there's a changing magnetic field, and vice versa. And Maxwell reinforced that these fields are a part and parcel of the same thing. You can't have one without the other. The search for magnetic monopoles is a waste of time. Firstly, because they don't come as monopoles, they come as dipoles. And you'll never find the magnetic field without the electric field being present as well. So there's two reasons why that search is going to be forever fruitless, despite the occasional claims that they're close to a breakthrough or they've detected a potential candidate signature for the monopoles. They don't exist, because Faraday and Maxwell proved it in practical experiments with Faraday, with mathematics in Maxwell, and now I've gone and proved it again by showing that in an equilateral triangle, geometrically, where you have an electric field, you have a magnetic, and it's a magnetic dipole field. So we've got practical experiments, we've got mathematics, and we've got geometric statements now through tetrionics and the work of Maxwell and Faraday that say this is what you have to work with. This is what you need to use to explain all these results that are out there, how they're working. Forget about the math they give, because even their math will be heavily focused on the electric or the magnetic components, not the electromagnetic, unless they simply state their measurements in watts, as in power transfer or power creation. But wherever they do, because we're talking free energy or zero point energy, vacuum energy devices, over unity devices, they've all got the same problem to explain, and that is, where is this extra energy coming from? And I still had the same problem with Tetrionics, despite having done QED, QM, and chemistry. I couldn't explain where this extra energy came from. I could show where the energy went from one side to the other, what forms it took, and I could explain all the electrical processes, but I couldn't explain this creation until I looked at fission and fusion, and then realized that both of those topics were grievously in error in modern physics. And sadly, the popular side of fission and fusion has grown so much, and the acceptance of the ideas like black holes, that to have a new insight and to promote that new insight flies headlong not only with modern science, but it also runs into the free energy community, who rely on devices like vacuum energy and singularities, magnetic monopoles, magnetic and or electric, or magnetic or electric, never magnetic and electric, to explain this energy imbalance. Some of this is just purely because experimental and theoretical, physics is split into two camps, experimental and theoretical, because it's hard to be a specialist in both. And likewise, you should consider that there is a third camp, aside from even the experimental physicists, and that is of the practical experimenter, who develop these devices and who show us technologies that defy modern scientific explanation, because the modern theory isn't up to it, but equally have some of their own some faults themselves. So what I see Tetrionics doing is giving a foundation on which we can apply geometric principles to all these devices, look at how they could possibly work, weed out the ones that just are pure nonsense, because there are those that are really crazy ideas that never worked, Edwin Gray's and other things like that, where they rely on the fact that the equipment's been destroyed and the information's been suppressed and things like that. So we don't have any definable practical experiments to build on or to model. We can ignore those. We can focus instead on the Bedinis, the Beardens, and other people that we've mentioned, Rodens, in order to model what's really going on and to get practical devices to market and to explain them, bring them back into the scientific fold, which has been split since the photoelectric effect. And that's what I strove to do with Tetrionics. I needed to find a practical device that would generate energy that you could put on a bench top and say, look, this is the energy in, this is how the circuit's working, and this is what I'm getting out. And not only that, but I didn't want to fall into the same trap that Tesla fell into, which was to invent a device that I couldn't explain. Because that's as bad as having a theory that has no practical device. But in order to do that, I had to have this additional learning curve of understanding fission processes as well as fusion itself. And they're completely different. And that's why I was hinting at the electromagnetic field of bar magnets. Because while we can pick up a bar magnet, hold it in our hands and rotate it around, we can't see the electric and the magnetic fields. But they exist. We can sense and use the magnetic field components all the time. But we can't see them. A bar magnet is for... in all respects, so far as electric and magnetic fields, identical to a star. And this is where we start to use the ideas of disruptive DC discharges to create electromagnetic fields and to tap them using inductive loops or containment what's the word, containment vessels. There's 101 different ways of even using my basic energy principles in Tetrionics to create thousands of devices, literally thousands. As many devices as we've created with transverse waves, we can create again using longitudinal waves. The advantage, though, is that longitudinal waves transfer real power through the air to a remote point where real horsepower can be extracted inductively to run a motor or to light a bulb and do things that we want without the need for transmission cables like we have now, without transmission losses. And all you need to do is understand how a sun works as opposed to the model of fusion in order to create a device that then produces these waves and that we can tap into. Every single one, well, not every single one, a large majority of all the free energy devices tap into either electric or magnetic fields. The ones that have spark gaps are simply feeding energy to momentarily create or replicate what a star does continuously, and then trap that energy that's released on a very short-term basis in capacitors or to light a bulb, whatever. What we need to do is move from creating these momentary models and trying to develop an elegant theory based on old ideas to explain them, and move to a theoretical platform that explains not only these devices, but also explains and corrects a lot of the ideas of modern science. And it's a big request to ask everyone to change their mental maps of what electrons look like, how stars work, what radioactivities really, what's really happening in radioactivity, and what this energy looks like and how it's released. But once you get your head around the geometry, and that's all tetrionic theory is, it's a geometric reinterpretation of modern physics. Once you see the geometry and get your mental images straight, then it becomes child's play to look at all these devices and go, that's what's going on. This is the circuit that, what the circuit's doing. This is what the electric and the magnetic fields are doing. This is why there's current or no current, and yet we're getting power. This is why we're getting more energy out than we're getting in. This is where it's coming from. But there's the one thing I learned was the thing that gets up scientific noses a lot is over unity, more energy out than in, without an explanation. And equally, what gets up the experimentalist nose more than anything is a scientist saying theory cannot explain it, therefore it cannot be true. Both are heights of hubris on both parties. What I'm trying to do now is give my theory, which unites all modern science, and apply it to these devices to bring these devices back into the mainstream where they work, the ones that work. Because there's quite a few of them that will work, and we'll be able to explain where they, how they work, and improve upon them. Because there's, even in my ebooks, I hint at the technologies that we can have. When you understand fusion, not only can you create lots and lots of limitless clean energy and send it wirelessly anywhere in the world, but you can do one other thing with it. And this comes about because the way stars work is they create energy by observing the law of conservation, which is that, electrical or not, mass, energy, and charge is conserved. Whatever you have to start with is whatever you have at the end. The equation has to balance. But what's missing in that equation is an understanding of matter. Physics at the moment says that, interchanges the word mass and matter so often it's nauseating, your head spins. Even in the same sentence, they'll swap one word for the other. But when you understand how a star works, you realize what the star does is it collapses matter. Tetrions, protons, electrons, neutrons, helium, hydrogen, collapses their physical topology of mass energy and releases that stored mass energy outward into space. A bit like crushing a gas cylinder under a vise. Imagine putting it in a scrapyard, put the gas cylinder on the compactor's platform and flattening it. As you flatten it, all the energy stored, all the gas stored inside that cylinder rushes out. It's not a perfect analogy to matter, but it's close enough to serve the purpose. That's what a star's doing. This, you have to also understand gravitational fields, but we won't discuss them. But what's happening at the core of a star is nothing more than an electromagnetic pinch. The pinch, the gravitational fields attract matter to the core. And at the core of the star, at the singularity point where the electric and magnetic fields meet, the electric and magnetic fields collapse matter topologies. Matter, unlike mass, energy, charge, momentum, is not conservative. I repeat, not. You can use mass energy to create matter where it wasn't before. And likewise, stars take matter and collapse it to make, to release mass energy. It still balances out in the terms of energy, so you don't have over unity, but what's missing from the mathematical equations and from the experimental understanding is matter topologies. It's the shape of the matter where mass energy is curved into different particles that is collapsed. It's destroyed. You go from a icosahedral proton to a flat diamond-shaped mass energy EM wave. You look at the star, it's just an electromagnetic field. It is drawing in matter and collapsing it in the core, radiating it out. When we create a DC discharge in a lot of these free energy devices, and I stress DC discharge, you're mimicking what's the pinch that's at the core of a star for an ever so minute fraction of a second. But the point is, and this is the point that brings it home, the energy that some of these devices in the free energy market release is more than what's been generated by the fusion scientific community in all the time they've been running their experiments, despite the vast amounts of energy that they've poured into the experiment to start with. So what I'm trying to get at is, through experimentation, the free energy zero point community have discovered a small scale way of replicating the processes in a sun here on Earth, and they tap that to create their devices. Not all of them, but there's a fair percentage out there that do that. Wherever you see the DC spark gap is what's going on there. This is what Tesla was playing with. And this is why he ended up creating lightning balls. A lightning ball is just a momentary spherical geometry of EM fields. That's just like a sun, except very short-lived. But again, once they created these DC discharges and saw the energy coming out, they couldn't explain it. So they fell back to try and explain it with the theory. Firstly, their ideas, however valiant, weren't sufficient to explain what was really going on. And secondly, they still disagree with relativity and modern science's explanation of energy and where energy comes from and how it's used in nature. Again, both of those problems came about because there was no bottom-up understanding of physics, which is what tetrionics gives. But the double-edged sword of tetrionics is, even though you've got the basic understanding of how everything works, you still have to change your mindset and apply it to each and every one of these devices as they're designed. And some of the problem is, a lot of these guys don't give you their full the full schematics and the full explanation of their work. They won't reveal it. and they say, make it and it will work. Here's the one I made, it works. And they're not revealing all the information. With Tetrionix, I just give you all the information. It may turn out to be not 100% perfect, but it's more than enough to start creating more of these devices. And all these devices we make, be it clean, limitless energy, or the ability to take radioactive waste, put it into a pinch and destroy it, release it as clean energy. And just to say that another way, we can take our radioactive or any garbage, any waste, it's a form of matter, put it in a pinch and release it as energy that we can use. It completely replaces every form of energy creation on the planet. It's clean, it's limitless. It will last for as long as we have matter, and that includes oxygen to breathe. And we can use it for a lot of other technologies that I haven't even discussed here. Things like long-distance telecommunication, a whole number of different things that I've worked out as I've gone through the theory. But there's a whole world, and what we should do is start applying Tetrionix to a number of these devices to work out exactly what's going on in them, to get the most efficient ones that are out there and put them into use. Some may require modification, like Rodin's coils will be perfect for modeling the electrical fields, but there are no practical use for extracting energy because the toroidal design precludes the pinch point. It's in the donut where nothing's happening. All the windings are around the donut electric fields. There's nothing at the pinch. And that's why the current fusion plants, the toroidal ones, the tokamaks, don't work. Because all the magnets are designed to hold the plasma in this donut E-field. But they never allow the formation of a pinch. The design that you want to make a practical so-called fusion plant, which I call an EM pinch design, I'll send to you now at the moment, Otto, so you've got a copy there, and I'll give everyone reference. It's in my cosmology ebook. Like I said, nothing's hidden. It's just a matter of people getting their head around it, and it's illustration 73.15 is the fields, and then 73.16 gives you the basic design. And the easiest pinch to make would be one that's in a with a water containment device, and we run it just like a steam engine. As the pinch is running, it's collapsing molecules of water, which then heat up the molecules of water with the radiant mass energy. That in turn creates steam. We can run it off to a turbine, and we've completely replaced nuclear power plants. We can use these same things for many, many technologies on boats. You can take the containment field away and just run the pinch in the air like a glowing ball of light, and that will create an energy field that we can tap into. And we can even convert all the airplanes in the world to electric motors, create a big enough field, and they fly through the field extracting the energy directly to the motors without any wires or any batteries on board or anything like that needed. No pollution from jets ever again. You can do the same thing to cars, electric motors in cars and trucks, because you can transfer real amperage and real horsepower to any point in the field. So trucks even can draw down tens or hundreds of amps in order to make electric trucks practical, which you can't do now with battery technology. So there's all these exciting technologies that are going to grow out of it. And really what they're growing out of is what these zero-point guys have been experimenting with for the last 100 years since the passing of Tesla, and what Tesla championed since the development of the photoelectric effect and relativity. That's where the split occurred. When the photoelectric effect was explained and relativity held sway in the scientific community, we started to disregard what Tesla was saying and showing us, and we stopped putting serious scientific funding and investigation into the longitudinal waves, which in turn would have advanced science anyway, because they would have been forced to come up with the theory that I've worked out in order to explain the results. But at the moment, they just say it's not possible, or it's over unity, and they shrug their shoulders and walk off. We've got to get cooperation between the two groups back hand in hand. And the way I suggest it is simply to use geometry. Geometric EM fields explain so much.
Well, you know, clearly it's pointed out that science, as we now know it, is only half of the story. And it's nice how you refer to the photoelectric effect as splitting science apart. But also that the other half of the story has already been available and continued to be available. And in what you described in the previous session, it is very explicit how the transverse and the longitudinal waves together compose the field. I wonder if there is anything more about what you can say, say analogous to what you have been finding for the integration of the different parts of physics, and what you also found for the various parts of electrodynamics and electric theory. Is there something like that possible for what is seen in the field of the zero-point energy devices? Already mentioned, there are very many different approaches, there are very many different results, there are very many different devices with different philosophies behind them. But Tetrionics was able to integrate many different theories in electricity, magnetism, gravity, and so on. Have you already been able to do some of that for these zero-point energy devices, or is there a lack of the detailed descriptions?
It's not so much the lack of detailed descriptions. There's a fair amount out there. John Bedini puts a lot of videos out on the marketplace for people to look at, and John Bearden's done the same. He's recorded a few long discussions on his idea of what's going on with space-time and the destruction of dipole energy and things like that. As I sort of touched on during the discussion, I think you'll find, and I haven't exhaustively looked at all the current stuff that's out there in zero point or over unity energy, because I've been well and truly focused on unifying physics as it is through the theory and getting it out to the marketplace. But the basics will still stand true. You'll find a lot of these devices will either tap into either electric or magnetic physical processes. Where there's a spark gap discharge, you can immediately begin to assign them to a group where they're mimicking on a small scale electromagnetic pinches that work in the sun and tapping that energy, what Tesla would have called radiant energies. So there's a big group that sort of splinter off straight away that focus on Tesla's work, and then accordingly, as I've said, they tend to develop their own theoretical ideas as to what's really going on. There's devices out there that run on different ideas like black energy and black electrons, all sorts of different. There's one out there that purports to be working on the quantum model of an electron. I can assure you his device is nothing like the quantum model of an electron. And I can back up my statement by showing you how my theory applies across all the unified physics. So immediately you can reject a claim like that, and you can look at devices that have a component that you can relate to, either electrically or magnetically, or in the case of a pinch, electrodynamically, and say that's got a basis that we can immediately assign to either a fission or a so-called fusion, as they term it, process, or and then you'll find the rest will tend to split off into two other groups. One will be just a group of devices that are put up by people that are trying to make or take advantage of this lack of precise scientific terminology. So they say we extract our energy from the virtual particles that are pulled back in through a singularity to tap the vacuum energy of space. Statements like that where there's lots of fluffy words, but it's really only disguising the fact that their device doesn't really work and they just want to sell something. So we can put them into a basket case all of their own, the snake oil salesman, if you like. And then we'll be left with just this other core group. We've already got the snake oils and we've got the Teslas, usually running on a EM pinch or a DC discharge, however you wish to term it. But the core group that's left will be split into two parties. They will either have devices that work on magnetic fields, which will probably wouldn't even be a split 50-50, to be like 75% will be guys that use the magnetic fields to create energy in one form or another, either through rotation of like the ball race one you showed me the other day, John Searle's work, where the magnetic forces create motion, and in turn they can be used to capture or to run to capture energy or to run a turbine to generate energy. And then there'll be another small group, which is probably 25%, because the electric force is not always so easily discerned or created like the magnetic. The magnetic force to us is usually the explanation in physics, because it's the invisible field that's easy to find, or relatively easy to find. You can find it, you can make it, you can get it to do things, you can model it with its fields of force, you can make CAT scanners and things like that. Because so much technology works has been wrapped around these invisible fields of force, lines of force, as Faraday called them, the electric stuff, where discharges and that fall into place, and processes where radioactive decay, where particles are accelerated in order to create currents and things like that, make another small section of that remaining community. And what Tetrionics will do when we get the time and the manpower to start sitting down and sorting through these is we'll divide into these four groups. But as we model all their different devices, we'll find them all coming back, because at the end of the day, they all work, or they either don't work or they do work. And the ones that do work will always work on the same laws of physics that the universe works on. And ultimately, they'll be shown that they all work on one aspect or the other, the electric or the magnetic component of various combinations of these equilateral plane quanta. So they will lead back into tetrionic theory. Tetrionic theory unified quantum mechanics, QM, QED, quantum cosmology and mathematics on the sciences side of things. I've got no doubt it'll do the same thing to the practical experimentation side. But for the last 5 years, I was heavily focused in absorbing knowledge and information and applying tetrionics wherever I could and producing the illustrations that explained it as fast as I could. And then I put it out to the community. I'm now in this consultation phase, if you like, of explaining it to the community. And this is where discussions with yourself are very handy, because it's giving me the opportunity to verbalize what I've put into the pictures and explain in more detail all these connections that I see in my head that even the pictures don't clearly announce and proclaim to the public. If I was to write it as a typical scientific paper for publication in a journal, I'd be hard pressed. I've done an introduction that's 8 pages long, just touching on what tetrionics can do. There would be literally probably 100 times as many pages as there are illustrations to fully explain tetrionic theory to the masses in detail. It'll happen, but it's all a time of effort. What we need is basically two camps. Is we'll need the just like physicists at present, experimental guys and practical guys and theoretical guys that can take tetrionics, apply it to the 0 point over unity groups, and start weeding these groups into their difference, whether they're snake oil or whether they're Tesla or whether they're electric or magnetic groups, and then start documenting again how these devices work. Because the zero-point community is no different than science as I perceive it now. Science has spent all this time using mathematics and models to develop our modern theory to the point where it is now. But it's a top-down approach. It's full of assumptions, full of errors, full of little tiny discrepancies and failures of assumption that creep in that cause problems elsewhere, which is why we've got different theories of physics. Tetrionics unites all of them, explains them all in one theory, with from one geometry. We do the same thing with the over-unity guys and the communities, and what we'll get out of that is a real, it's like sorting the wheat from the chaff. We'll thrash them out, we'll model them, and not only will we understand how their devices work and how to build more of them so that they work each and every time, but we'll also improve upon them. Because we'll say, well, this component's causing a phase change that we don't really want. We should be eliminating it or changing the design to increase the efficiency. The other thing to remember is that EM pinches are 200 times more efficient than the current model of fusion. That is, if all 100% of all the energy stored in matter is released when the matter topology is collapsed. There's no waste products. There's no highly radioactive isotopes that are created. It is pure radiant mass energy, electromagnetic waves. And all the energy of that atom is released in that process. But being 200 times more efficient, it basically equates to only needing 6 kilograms of matter to power the world on present energy consumptions. Doesn't matter how much we increase our consumption, once we start these pinch generators up, we will always have enough energy to meet the world's demands. Even if everyone runs air conditioners and everyone leaves their lights on 24/7 and the population explodes, what we'll run out of living space before we run out of a process of making energy to meet our needs. And that's what's exciting. A lot of these zero-point devices will become part and parcel of this technology base that's been neglected for the last century. They've all struck a chord one way or the other, electric or magnetic. Even if they are Tesla, they'll be electric or magnetic devices. They've all struck a chord at a particular niche to meet a need, whether it's to create water or clean water or to propel an engine somewhere or make a turbine produce more energy than they expected out of the starting battery. They all form a particular function, and all those functions will find niches in the new technology as we develop all these new different energy sources. But the exciting thing is, even in the basics of tetrionics, we know how to convert matter into energy on a limitless basis, clean energy. But down the track, we'll have another discussion on this, using tetrionic theory, we can take that raw energy and convert it back into whatever form of matter we want. So we can turn raw energy, we can take radioactive waste, turn it into energy, and turn it back into clean water, or turn it back into oil, turn it back into silica. Whatever element we want, we can produce using this process that was built on the foundation of equilateral triangles of electromagnetic fields. So to answer your question, what I've done for physics, for scientific theory, will no doubt be done again for the zero-point community, because I see them simply as the experimental side that's been neglected for a century because science took a different tack. They followed relativity. to the point where they are now with multiple theories and more knowledge with less understanding.
Yeah, very much so. Calvin, I would like to suggest that we round off this part of the conversation, but I have a follow-up question which I'd like to immediately connect up to this, which is what I would like to do separately in a separate recording, and that would be about how can we invite the theoreticians and the practical researchers to start to understand tetrionics so that they can work with these zero-point energy devices from a different perspective. I'm asking that particularly also because I know of a group where zero-point energy is being studied, but they have a much larger potential than is being achieved at the moment. So is it okay with you if I come right back to you in a moment and we explore that?
For sure. That's a $64,000 question.
Okay, then I'll just hang up and come right back to you.
Okay.
One moment, please.